Books.
Hello and welcome to episode 120 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Krista Pechko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
I was waiting for someone to speak.
I thought last week I jumped on Angie, and so I was like, I will wait. But I think Angie thought the same thing, because then neither of us said
anything. It's like a rock, paper, scissors thing, where like then you both do like paper or something, and you're just We're both paper. Fuck that, man.
Not even the good choices, just paper.
Before we have more awkward silence, let's talk about our one big movie of the week, Independence Day Resurgence. We are just reviewing that this whole episode, so it is a supersized review for you, where we will talk
about the movie, and then so many thoughts,
and at some point we are going to warn you that we're going to talk about spoilers, so that's coming as well. So first, let's jump into it with the IMDb synopsis. 2 decades after the first Independence Day invasion, Earth is faced with a new extrasolar threat, but the will mankind's new space defenses be enough? What a shitty synopsis.
That is a terrible synopsis. That is literally like the first 10 minutes, and I don't know, having seen the movie, what an extrasolar threat is.
Is extrasolar even like a common
That would make me
phrase?
Think it's like super sun, and that has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, that's kind of...
guys are being really hard on the synopsis. You try to summarize the fucking movie. It makes no sense.
All right, well, basically
aliens are
all
back
that it is
20 years later.
Yeah,
Jeff Goldblum
Goldblums
it up.
That's really all that it is. So, yeah, it's 20 years later. The aliens are back, and the certain people on Earth knew they were coming, so they made this thing called the Earth Space Defense Program, and they combine human technology with alien technology so we could use it to fight them, which I think is a really cool place to start. That's really interesting. The problem from there is that I should preface it by saying I am a hardcore Independence Day fan. The 1996 Independence Day is one of my favorite movies to watch of all time. I have seen it. I mean, I've seen this thing dozens of times. I can quote almost the whole movie from beginning to end. I still love watching it today and think it holds up really well. I just watched it again the other day. This movie, I don't want to say I walked into this movie with sky-high expectations, you know, hoping for my masterpiece and the sequel that I always dreamed of, but there's a big difference between making a so-so sequel that does not meet expectations and making one that upsets fans of the original. Like, when I walked out of the movie, I was almost in tears because I couldn't wrap my head around existing in a place now where the events of Independence Day Resurgence don't taint how I love the original, you know?
Yeah. Wait, why did Resurgence, like, what about it made it so that it retroactively taints the original other than just it's a shitty sequel?
Because there's so many key players from the original involved. Like what they do with President Whitmore. Now when I go back and I watch that first film and I know where he's heading.
I totally agree. I absolutely agree. So here's the thing. It's like they don't know how to leave well enough alone. And instead of being like, okay, it's 20 years later, we're going to get a new cast of characters who have to deal with this threat again, they do this thing where they kind of half-heartedly take some people from then and some people from now. And when they take the people from then, they eradicate all the happy endings we hoped we got. Like, yeah, President Wilmore lost his wife, and that was terrible. But he was, like, with his daughter, and they were going to be okay. And then, like, they cut to this movie, and he has, like, depression beard and has, like, weird, like, Howard Hughes nonsense going on. And you're like, what is going on with him? And it's just super depressing and gross. And then, like, Jeff Goldblum, remember how he got back together with his wife in the last movie? She is not around. We never talk about her. We've completely forgotten she exists. Even the dad was like, when are you going to get a beautiful woman in your life? Completely forgot she exists. And then it's like, Will Smith's character is dead. That has nothing to do with anything. That just happened in between the 20 years because they couldn't get him to sign back on.
Did that moment get a laugh in your screening when all of a sudden he popped up?
No, okay. I actually went to the press screening, and in case you don't follow film Twitter obsessively, the press screening for this movie actually occurred after the movie had opened to the public. So there was only a few people at my screening.
I saw it like when it opened to the public, like I saw it in a regular public screening. And yeah, people laughed when, because the first time that Will Smith is mentioned is when like you are in the White House and then
they literally
have like
a big oil painting
of
him.
And it's so funny. Like our theater laughed. It was very dumb.
They seem to have been, I had done the set visit for Independence Day Resurgence, and they seem to have had some cooler ideas with that, because when we went there and we were in the art department room, they had cool comics featuring Captain Stephen Hiller, as though he was almost like their superhero, you know? Because of, because of what he had done.
To be released as, like, supplementary marketing material, or, like, movie?
More so for being in the movie. Like, I would have imagined those being props that people would have carried around. And that would have been a much nicer way to have honored the character in this, rather than a really hokey portrait in the White House.
Well, also, because there's such an off-the-cuff line, they're like, Captain Hiller, it's nice to meet you. Of course, we know your father by reputation. It's a shame he died in that test pilot crash. And you're like, the hell, who says that? No one says that to someone. And there's like a lot of lines in this movie that have like heavy exposition because they're just trying to fill the gap. Like, there's literally a line in this movie where one person says to another, you've been in a coma for 7300 days.
I think that a lot of this is kind of, so the one of the biggest problems with this movie is that there are about 27 different characters that you're supposed to keep track of on some level. And I think that all the stuff that you guys are saying, so much of the problem is that with that many goddamn characters, it can't actually develop any of them or give any of them satisfying arcs or motivations. I think actually, like, it's shitty what they do to a lot of the old characters, I agree, but it's almost worse what they do to the new characters. Like, I'm not as sad about because I don't care about them, but that's the problem. Like, this franchise wants to keep going, so they're like, oh, now your new heroes are like Liam Hemsworth and Micah Monroe and
Jesse Usher
who plays Will Smith's son, and like, and there's like two other Nicholas extra Wright characters guy, and like they're like, oh, those are your new Nicholas heroes Wright. Are you excited? And then like none of them do anything. You could consolidate all five of those characters pilots. Into like one or two characters and be fine. And absolutely. It really there's just raises the pilots. Question of, like, why bother?
No, I totally agree. There's, like, all these pilots that fly in and, like, they reenact the first movie. But they're like, well, if we go in there and we blow up this thing, then everything's going to be okay. And then that doesn't work because we've already done this. And it's to the point where you're like, we've already seen this. So there's, like, a 30-minute section of the movie that is just reenacting the last movie. And you're like, no, we know. I don't understand, like, was there a big demand to even want a sequel to this movie? Because I love Independence Day, and I will watch it every time it's on, and I will cry every time Bill Pullman talks about how the world has to come together. But, like, I never wanted them to pick this story back up. And it's like they pick it up only 20 years later. So it's like,
they've been talking about this ever since the first one was a big hit, per usual with this industry. So it's not like this kind of came out of nowhere decades down the line. Like, Roland Emmerich's been, that's the scary thing to me, is that Roland Emmerich's been working on an Independence Day sequel in some respect for like 20 years now, and this is the movie that we get. It's absolutely horrifying. I as a big fan, if you say Independence Day 2, I'm gonna want to see it no matter what. And when they first started releasing information about this, I thought they had some great ideas. I like the idea of them combining the human tech with the alien tech. I think that's really interesting. I like the idea of us using that to build a base on the moon, because you know, at this point in reality, obviously we're not building bases in that respect, but we're close to doing something, you know, lunar, in space, whatever. So I like that. And then going back to the President Whitmore thing, I thought that was even pretty interesting. The fact that his encounter with the alien could have that kind of lasting effect. So it's like introducing all these cool little details and then just saying them and not doing anything with them.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, it's the same thing as I was complaining about the characters. There's just, like, there are good ideas. Like, you're right. Even when I hear them right now, I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. I want to know about that. But this movie doesn't tell you, because it introduces them and then it doesn't have enough time or it doesn't give it enough time or attention. So all of it goes nowhere. Like, for example, the whole thing about, like, oh, they combined, like, alien tech and, like, human tech. Like, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then when you see it in the movie, you're like, oh, they just look like guns that look slightly different, I guess.
It's interesting to the point where you can very clearly connect the dots. Like, the combination tech that I found really interesting was, I loved how human jet fighters were moving. I love how I'm doing hand motions right now, like everyone can see me, but how the human jets move like the alien spacecrafts that we saw in the first movie. That's interesting. Okay. Giving people souped up guns with green glowy shit all over it, Yeah, you know, not really.
I mean, even the fighter pilot stuff,
like, could be a neat background detail, but that's the thing. Like, there's just, I don't know, this movie feels like such a jumble. Like, there are all these new characters. We didn't even talk about the busload of children, the literal busload of children that are wedged into this movie.
Wait. Before we talk about the busload of children, tell me you guys noticed the dog.
Yes.
We noticed the dog.
That's okay. See, here's the thing. That's what I'm talking about. It's literally like they're like, oh, we saved a dog last time. We have to have another dog. But this time.
I love all animals. It's very difficult to put an animal in a movie and have me not like that animal. Why do you cast a dog that looks like that?
Are you body shaming the dog?
No, that's breed shaming, I think.
Its
this is amazing.
Eyes were popping out of its head.
It was an ugly dog.
I don't know. Maybe I thought that Perry like animals. It turns out she's really
this
just
movie
like,
broke
showing,
her.
Like, the pretty
it might have just been that point in the movie where I had had enough. But when they introduced the dog, I did one of those things where I was laughing. I couldn't stop. And then every single time the dog popped up in the background, I was laughing. Oh my god! It was. I just don't understand why you don't cast a classic dog like Boomer in the first one.
You like Chappie, but you're mad at this dog because it's not cute enough?
Can we agree that Michael Monroe seems like she's asleep in this movie, though? I know that you really like
her
from It Follows.
What does she have to wake up for? They don't give her anything to do.
That's
like,
true.
She probably saw the script and was just like, well, fuck, I guess I could just sleepwalk through this one. I mean, that's the thing with like all the new characters, like, and the old ones too, really. But like the old ones at least have like established personalities from the last film that they can kind of like carry on. Like Jeff Goldblum is Jeff Goldblum. Like, you know, like Brent Spiner and the Judd Hirsch are all just like the same characters or whatever. But the new characters, we're meeting them for the first time and none of them have personalities. They kind of have personality types.
Well, Micah's
like,
a
they're
continuation
trying to get
character.
Liam Hemsworth to play the Will Smith, like the new Will Smith, like the, you know, cocky, arrogant, but so charming. But it's Liam Hemsworth. It's Gale from The Hunger Games.
Okay,
yeah, that
here's
was
the
ever
thing,
gonna
though.
Work.
I actually thought he was kind of fun and charming in this, and I am more shocked by anybody about that. But it felt to me like this was his Han Solo audition, where he was being like,
yeah,
I can do
God
this,
didn't
Ben,
get
look
then.
At me go. And it's okay, but it's like, it's
I mean,
not,
it's his fault, because they also don't give him much to do, so I'm not completely laying the blame on him.
Also,
like,
why does he know who Jeff, like, why does he know Jeff Goldblum's character? Because, like, they set up that they have a relationship, but they never have set up, like, how the fuck that happened. He just shows
like,
up to pick him
that's
up.
That's such a minor point in a sea of things about this movie that makes no sense. Should we
I imagine forward? they would know each other through Patricia Whitmore, who knows him.
That's
from
true.
The
they
the
do have mutual
film.
Friends. They also both know Jesse Usher's character.
Yeah.
Like, they have
a
lot of
a
friends
lot of
in common, so.
Also, like, there's just, we spent
that,
so much
that
time
was
on the
really
space
disappointing
station.
Thing, that they didn't explore the relationship between Patricia and Dylan a little more. It's just
at
the
all.
Fact that they... It's like, oh, you guys were in the movie together. You guys know each other. But, like, they were joking on set during my interview. It's like, could you imagine the 4th of July barbecues between our families? But, like, yeah, I do wonder what life was like for your families between now and the events of the original. It's, like, not a joke. I really want to bet.
But the even weirder thing about them not exploring it is that that is one of the first relationships you see in the movie. Those two characters mm-hmm. see each other and they're like really excited to see each other because they're like friends and you're like, oh, cool, they're friends. And then it like never comes up again, basically.
Yeah.
Like people and like, you know, once again, this movie just kind of like introduces things and it's like, eh.
But yet weirdly, this movie makes enough room for there to be two separate white dude characters whose whole thing is that they're dweebs who are ineffectual and then are actually good at something.
I'm
not, you
even,
got that little
it's not
flyer
even the
nerd.
Fact that they're white men that bothers me. It really, this movie would have cost half as much to make if it cut out all the extraneous characters. There are so
many. No, I totally agree.
Many.
But like there's the nerdy flyer kid who's like Liam Hemsworth's buddy who's crushing on like the reason in this movie will do well in China. Angela baby. But it, I mean, right? Like there's a character that's in there solely so that like China will be excited. And I'm assuming she has more to do in the Chinese version because she has nothing to do in this. But we should go into spoilers. But my point is that this movie, I agree with Angie, this movie has a lot of characters it doesn't need. And it's not like in the first movie.
A lot of characters add a lot of ideas that it's
yeah,
just like,
it doesn't.
Eh.
It doesn't make the world feel bigger though. Like it's supposed to feel global. And because they felt so the need to grab onto these like tiny characters from the first one, like Will Smith's son and the president's daughter, it feels smaller, not bigger.
So Perry, you want to take us into spoilers?
Yeah. So, this spoiler. Okay, warning, this is a massive spoiler, and everything we're going to talk about from this point forward is spoilers, so don't listen to this if you don't want Independence Day Resurgence spoiled for you. All right, what the fuck, that white ball. Really? Really?
Honestly?
I was sitting there, like, you know, gripping the handrest of my seat. I'm like, I'm going to like something in this. I'm going to find something. Then that came up, and I'm like, wow, this is it. It's over.
I actually disagreed, because up until then, the movie feels so kind of like generically, like, I don't know, stuff is crashing. There's an alien. CG, like, whatever. And then the alien ball showed up, and I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, is this movie about to get, like, really weird in an interesting way? Like, you know, fucking Jupiter Ascending style or some shit? And then, like, no. Like, I actually that was, like, my favorite part of the movie when the orb showed up. I was like, what is happening? And I was like, oh, this movie's finally going to get interesting. And then, the alien is first of all, not even, like, mad that humans tried to kill. It's just like, you know, you tried to kill me, so that wasn't cool. And people are like, oh, oops. And it's like, it's cool. I'll help you anyway.
Yeah, there's,
like,
no consequences to that.
No.
Where she's like, I was coming to help you, but I guess it's okay that I still got here in the nick of time. But, like, yeah, that's the big thing in this movie. There's no consequences for the major moments. Like, the aliens almost dig to the Earth's fucking molten core, and they're like, they're 2 minutes away. And I'm like, okay, so we're good then? That's still fine? We don't need to worry about the Earth destroying itself because of that? Oh, great. Awesome. Because
the fact that now there's, like, a giant, giant, giant hole in the ground in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. Apparently, and, like, that's not another thing. Like, if that's true, so have the tides receded? Is there more land? What animals? Like, they never get in any of this. They don't care, because that's not what it's about, of course. It's about setting up another goddamn sequel we don't want to watch. But, like, it's just crazy. The other thing that really drove me nuts about this is they're like, oh, yeah, but there was a queen alien. So she's like the other ones, but bigger. And I'm like, one, that is the laziest thing of why we need to bring this movie back. And two, they keep talking about how big she is, but you don't actually get to understand the scale of her until the final sequence. So it's lost on you. And they're like, well, here's a scan of the ship, and here's a scan of how big she is. And I was like, this means nothing to me. Like, you need, like, that little key in the corner. It's like, a human is this big. The alien is this big. Because otherwise, what the fuck are we looking at? This is a visual medium. Be visual. What the fuck? Very angry about it. Oy. I was, like, so mad because I saw this movie so late already. Like, I was, like, coming home and writing the review on my phone because this is what I was forced to do. And, like, the movie is just, it has so little impact that I actually forgot major characters died. I was texting with Angie and our friend Eric.
Oh my
Polsky,
God. The way, like, Vivica A. Fox's character, see, that to me, that right there is the perfect example of, like, a big fuck you to fans of the original.
You're
to
right.
To have a character go that way.
Because it's like, she's not an exotic really dancer anymore.
Me.
She's a doctor.
They brought back a hero
a
from the first
doctor.
Film that were like, that, you know, we were happy things ended well for. And they're like, look, she's back. Okay, she died. And you're just like, what? But then, like,
but
it's
right
not even
her
that.
Son,
like,
guys.
I mean, some of it,
you're welcome.
It's not even just that. Like, for example, like, it's also, like, edited in a way where it's hard to tell some characters died. Like, Celia Ward, yeah. Who plays the President of the United States, dies. And she dies off screen and so quickly that I didn't realize that she had even been injured until suddenly it just smash cuts to William Fichtner getting, like, sworn in. And they're like,
no, totally.
Everyone died besides you.
And I
was like, wait, what?
They were going to reveal she had lived because they cut away so abruptly. So I was like, no, she's okay. They're going to find out that she's okay. And then they just never refer to it again.
It really feels like they were just, like, missing 3 minutes of footage there. Like,
yeah.
someone just, like, cut it out. It was like, what the fuck? Why?
And I mean, and since we're in spoilers, like, even the death of Bill Pullman's character feels like, like, by the end of the movie, I forgot he had died because it's like, you know, when Randy Quaid died in the first one, like, we took a moment. We were very upset. And he was just a drunken doofus with a cowboy hat. Like, this is the president that we've loved for two movies. And, like, I forgot he fucking died. That's how poorly directed this is. And it makes me crazy because I think Roland Emmerich, like, I really liked White House Down. I know it didn't do
me
well.
Too.
But I feel like he still has it in him. I don't know what the fuck this is. This felt like he was,
know.
Like, you know, it does feel like a fucking fan. It feels like you guys didn't come out for my other movies. This is what you want, this garbage. And it makes me really nervous.
I look at this movie and I look at Stonewall, his most recent movie before this one, and it worries me. I don't know if he's capable of making a coherent film anymore because these two movies aren't just bad. They're like really bad. They're incomprehensibly bad. It's weird to me that someone would make something that's such a mess like this. It's really weird to me that there'd be so many people involved in making this movie and so many people that were involved in making the original that are just on set, like, saying blah, 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 and doing whatever Roland Emmerich tells them to do, and they think it's going to work. I just don't understand. This movie baffles me. And
yeah.
Before we have to wrap up, I was really excited that Brent Spiner was returning to play Dr. Oaken again. I loved that idea. And he feels like a cartoonish version of Dr. Oaken. And did either of you pick up on the relationship thing?
Yeah. Okay. So I asked Angie about this because I was like, I said, is he supposed to be in a gay romance, or did I make that up because I was so bored I needed something to follow?
You definitely didn't make that up. But when they first introduce it, Dr. Oaken is still in his coma and some guy comes in to water these orchids that he's been leaving in his room for however many years.
Gay guys love orchids. And everybody knows it.
But when he comes in, he looks like he's in, like, doctor attire. So I assumed he's been his doctor. And then as the movie goes on, you see them, like, holding hands and calling each other baby. And I'm like, oh, is that what's happening here?
I honestly, like, didn't, like, so Roland Emmerich, before this movie came out, Roland Emmerich was telling press, like, oh, there's, like, you know, there's a gay couple in this. And people were like, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, that's not something you see in every blockbuster. So people were like, that's kind of exciting. And then I had kind of forgotten about it. And then I saw this, and it literally wasn't until the death scene, since we're in spoilers, until he dies, that I was just like, oh, they were supposed to be a couple. Like, up until then, the thing is that I haven't revisited the original in a long time. So when I saw the guy, I was like, oh, I guess that's like a character from the original I don't remember. Like, I don't know.
Is when he did in the original? I didn't remember him either.
See, that's the problem with it, too, is that, you know, there's no reason to kind of connect the dots in that respect and think, oh, this guy has been by his side all these years.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that I need, like, their romance to be a major plot point in the movie, but it does really feel like it's trying to have it both ways, because when you compare the way the movie treats those two characters who are in a gay relationship to the characters who are in straight relationships,
which is true.
A lot more blatant and explicit. Like, there's a lot more, like, you know, like, they kiss.
Yeah, Micah Monroe throws herself at Liam Hemsworth and, like,
they make out in a sexy way, talk all the time about, like, oh, we're getting married, we live together, like, all that stuff. Like, they have conversations about it, and, like, like, the two, like, heterosexual characters that don't actually get together, you know, like, the guy's like, oh, like, I have a crush on this girl, and he asks her out on a date and she accepts. Like, it's very, very, like, there's no questioning that it's, like, a romantic or sexual thing between them. But with the other two, they try to have it both ways, where they were like, oh, they're in a relationship. But, like, I think it's very possible to watch this entire movie and, like, not quite pick up on it.
Oh, I had lengthy conversations about this movie after I got out, and most of the people I was with did not pick up on that.
Yeah. Well,
and even as a hardcore fan who has seen the original movie countless times, I didn't really remember that other guy.
So, like, was he in the other one? I didn't remember him at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. He's good for him, I guess.
The
original movie.
But, like, I mean, that was the death scene that actually mattered to me.
Now he's got a name, and in the first movie, I would never have been able to tell you his name, kind of thing, you know?
I mean, I have to say, I did like their relationship, even though I was not aware until the death scene that it was a romantic relationship, because I got that they cared about each other, which is not something that I felt with a lot of the other characters. Like, I know they had dialogue that was like, I really love you, fiance, let's move into a new house together, but, like, that gives me nothing, whereas, like, I believe that they cared about each other, but the degree to which they did, or the depth of their feelings, wasn't clear until that last scene. And I feel like in that way it reminds me of when J.K. Rowling is like, oh yeah, by the way, Dumbledore's totes gay, and you're like, okay, but, like, you don't really get, like, credit for representation when you are, like, purposely not addressing it. And, like, I feel like the movie, like you said, it's so subtle that I feel like if you don't pick up on that, like,
it's
you cannot
be blamed.
The only
thing about the movie that's fucking subtle,
It's funny, for a movie that has to spell everything out, then when it doesn't, it's still a problem.
It's the kind of movie that's like, as you know, your father died 20 years ago.
And then
with these two characters, like, up until that very last scene, I was like, is that his doctor? Is that, like, his friend? Like, is that his brother? Like, I literally just, like, did not have any idea what that relationship was supposed to be. But we've gone way over. We should wrap up.
All right.
Oh, final guys, Brent Spiner, wait, one sec. So that doctor character has been asleep for 20 years. His partner just died, and then he's going to find out gay marriage is legal? This is a very sad movie.
I feel like there's a lot of stuff that happens when we're not watching, like how President Whitmore suddenly loses his crazy person beard, and you're just like, really? In the middle of an
alien
attack,
close up on
like,
it,
I need to stop for 10 minutes and, like, shave my face clean. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. He had to be dashing for his heroic death scene.
While that was happening, they were explaining gay marriage to the guy that was in a coma for 20 years.
There you go. Well, at the end of this, they actually, like, they dare to insult us by making everybody kiss and make up and then go, now we have, like, a space war to fight. And I was like, oh, fuck you. I am, like, erasing this from my headcanon. As far as I'm concerned, there is no Independence Day resurgence. I love Independence Day. I will continue to watch it. I will not remember this happened.
I wish I had that ability. I'm kind of I'm kind of heartbroken. I'm really sad. It sounds ridiculous and over the top, but I walked home from my screening really just hurt. My childhood was just like
music plays
smashed to pieces.
Oh,
it's just, yeah, I'm really upset because I've also spent so many years now following this sequel. I don't know. It really does a big disservice to
guys,
the original.
Guys, this makes
and it
me
really...
scared about Ghostbusters. I'm really excited for Ghostbusters. What if this has been a shit summer for sequels?
I'm glad I'm not as attached to the original Ghostbusters as I was to the original Independence Day, because I don't think I could go through feeling like this again.
Man, I think at least it doesn't look like it doesn't look like Ghostbusters is so much a sequel that'll feel the need to do those tenuous lines to be like, hey, remember how this sort of connects or whatever? Because
are going to make a shit ton of references. They're going to shoehorn in so many references because that's how that kind of crap works.
But there's a way to do that I think can be fun for like old time fans, but not disruptive to new time fans. But like with Independence Day Resurgence, it's fucking dull because they're like pinning it down so hard to the first movie.
Okay, so I'm pretty sure it's big three, like thumbs down. So I'm doing
fuck
hand motions again. No one sees me. Thumbs down all around, correct?
Yeah.
We're giving thumbs down and Angie's flipping the bird. No one can see her to prove otherwise.
I'm not flipping the bird. It's a movie. You know, there's pictures and noise and then it ends.
That was Angie's Twitter review. Almost verbatim.
Yeah, apparently you should rewrite the IMDb synopsis. All right. That's a wrap on episode 120 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know where to find us. Go on iTunes and please subscribe, rate, and comment over there. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. Please like us on Facebook. We also have our Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. And then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go first?
Yes. You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I can be found on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. And I write all over the web, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com. And this week there, I have a ton of reviews. I reviewed every movie that opened.
And you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff. I'm on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. And you can find my very lengthy, very sad Independence Day Resurgence review on Collider.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
They're not screaming. They're celebrating.